And so I would like to start with Paul Footen, who is going to talk about carryover effects on above and below ground carbon and nitrogen pools in Douglas fir forests in the Pacific Northwest. Paul.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me all right out there? Good. Welcome to the third day, day three of SSSA conference. Thanks for sticking in there and coming to my talk. My name is Paul Footen, and I work under Rob Harrison at the what's now called the School of Forest Resources at the University of Washington. And today I'm going to talk about carryover effects on above and below ground carbon and nitrogen pools in Douglas fir forests, and I'll explain what carryover is in a second in case you're wondering. A brief introduction. In the Pacific Northwest, the most limiting factor for forest productivity is typically available plant nitrogen, or nitrogen for plants. So most past studies that have looked at infertilization on stand productivity show that the effects of fertilizer are temporary, lasting 5 to 10 years. However, recent studies have shown that there's this carryover effect, what we're calling it, that infertilization can last up to 15 to 25 years after last application on soils formed on glacial materials in the Pacific Northwest. And past studies have also shown that infertilization can increase above and below ground carbon and nitrogen pools. So what is carryover? Carryover is defined as the long-term impact of infertilization added to a previous stand on a subsequent rotations. And if you look at the chart below here, it kind of gives you a visual of what that might look like. On the y-axis, you have stand biomass or volume. You harvest the original stand. You fertilize on the second rotation. And then on the third rotation there, you can have any number of A, B, C, or D results from this carryover effect in fertilization. And so my research question is basically, how does this carryover affect above and below ground carbon and nitrogen pools? The study design started back in the late 60s and early 70s when the University of Washington and the Regional Forest Nutrition Research Project conducted fertilization trials. And then in the late 90s, they harvested those stands with bowl-only harvest. They also redistributed the branches and needles back onto the sites. They replanted, but they did not refertilize. And then the SMC, which is the Stand Management Co-op, also with the University of Washington, that took over for the RFNRP, began monitoring productivity. And at this point, we have five sites. There are at least 5 meter buffers. Several of the sites are actually have larger buffers than that. There are five plots that have what I'm calling a high fertilization rate, which is 1120 to 888 or 884 kilograms per hectare. There are five paired controls with those plots. And then on three of the sites, there are plots that have what I'm calling low fertilization rate, which is 448 to 224 kilograms per hectare. This is a map of Western Washington and the study site locations. As you can tell, they're in western and southwestern Washington here. There's one that is up by the Hood Canal area here. But they're all, as far as the site attributes go, and I think soil is beautiful, and this is a soils conference, so I really wanted to show a slide here. And I dug these pits. And so I wanted to also demonstrate the similarity in the soils, but yet also point out also the similarity in low site indices, but also that there is some variation in slope aspect elevation and annual precipitation in many of these sites. Like, for instance, the one that I showed you here by the Hood Canal gets considerable amount of rain, or less rain than the ones over here because of the rain shadow effect of the Olympic Mountains here. So on to materials and methods. The trees were measured annually and biannually. I sampled tree needles. I found the three dominant trees on each plot. I took the current year's growth on the second whorl down. I dried them and grind them to less than 1 millimeter and tested them in the CHN analyzer. For the understory, I had 5.25 meter squared randomly sampled areas per plot. And again, I dried the vegetation to a constant weight. I weighed it for biomass, and then I ground it and tested for CHN. I did the same thing with the forest floor. However, I only had 1.25 meter squared sample area, which was located next to each of the soil pits, which I dug one per plot in relatively plot center, 1 meter deep, or until I reached an impenetrable layer, which was usually compacted glacial till. And that happened on two plots, and I could only get to 50 centimeters on those plots. And so in order to analyze the soils equally across the board, what I've done is I've just analyzed from 0 to 50 centimeters. Many of the other sites did go to a meter. It just had two that went to 50 centimeters. The statistical analysis I used is as follows. All the plot level data was extrapolated up to kilogram per hectare estimates. The design is a randomized incomplete block because I have the three low fertilizers, five high fertilizers. I used ANOVA with a p-value of 0.1 to test for significance. And I also had a covariate of mortality because there were a couple plots that had scotch broom infestation, and the mortality was up to 30% on one plot, and another plot had about 25%. So I went ahead and threw that in there. And now we'll look at some results. The asterisks indicate significance. The solid black line is high fertilizer. The large dashed line is low fertilizer, and the small dashed line is the control. And I'm using A's and B's to indicate significance and differences. This is the 2008 measurement here, when the p-value is 0.07, and this is, dBH on the trees in 2008. This is the mean regional height for the trees. If you'll notice, five consecutive years prior to 2008, the height was significantly different on the high fertilized sites, but in 2008 it wasn't. However, the P was 0.2. Take that as you will. If you're a forest manager, you may still want to go ahead and call that significant or not. I'm using 0.1, so I'm not calling it significant. Looking at mean tree biomass, the high fertilized sites were significantly different than both the low fertilizer and the control. The mean tree needle nitrogen content, however, was not significantly different, yet on both the high and low fertilized sites, there was more nitrogen found in the needles. And quite surprisingly, and we'll see this trend kind of continue, the low fertilized site ended up having a little bit more nitrogen retention than the high fertilized site. Bit of a mystery. The understory biomass was significantly different in the high and low fertilized sites compared to controls. The nitrogen content of the understory vegetation was also significantly higher in the high and low fertilized sites. And now we're going to go below ground into the soil profile, and we're going to look at the forest floor, the O horizon biomass. was not significantly different, however, in the high and low fertilized sites, it was, as the trend has been showing, greater than the control. And the nitrogen content of the forest floor, or the O horizon, again, is higher in the high fertilized and the low fertilized sites compared to the control, but not significantly different. The soil nitrogen content, and this is again 0 to 50 centimeters, is higher on, and significantly higher on the low fertilized site. However, the control is slightly higher than the high fertilized site. The mean soil carbon content is lower on the high fertilized site and higher on the control and the low fertilized site, but not significantly different. So this graph, and I don't know if you can see it well because the colors may be too dark, but these are the total mean nitrogen pools then. So I took those graphs that you just seen and I combined them into one graph to show the differences in the total above ground nitrogen and total below ground nitrogen in the high, low, and control sites. And you'll see here again, interestingly enough, the low fertilized site somehow has about 3,000 more kilograms per hectare than the control, and about 2,000 kilograms per hectare more than the high fertilized site. And so here are these differences illustrated here. The high fertilized site end up having 258 kilograms per hectare above ground, yet less than the control had 138 kilograms per hectare less than the control. So that site ended up having, I believe, a couple hundred kilograms per hectare, or like 160 kilograms per hectare more. So 1,120 to 884 originally was fertilized 15 to 30 years ago on this site. And so it's retained about 150 kilograms per hectare. Whereas the low fertilized site has retained quite a bit more. Well, it's not retained, but it's actually created nitrogen somehow. Over 3,000 kilograms per hectare more. So again, we'll use this chart to look at the total mean carbon pools, and we'll see kind of the similar trend here. And the high fertilized site has greater carbon above ground as well as the low fertilized site compared to the control. But however, the carbon is kind of telling the same story as the nitrogen did. Where there's less carbon on the high fertilized site below ground and more on the low fertilized site. So in conclusion, the above ground carbon and nitrogen pools are significantly greater on the high and low fertilized sites than control. This could be due to bowl-only harvest and the redistribution of the material on site. The understory trees, the understory and the trees, and also microorganisms are quite possibly uptaking the high nitrogen content from the foliage of annual litter fall and retaining the nitrogen on the site. The below ground carbon and nitrogen pools are lower on the high fertilized sites than the controls. This could be due to the high fertilized pulse causing more carbon and nitrogen mineralization. Also could be by leaching nitrogen. The below and above ground low fertilized site had 3,000 kilograms per hectare more than the control, as I mentioned before. This could be a micro site factor. The N could have already been on site. I don't know because I don't have any baseline data. But the interesting take-home message from this is that the above and below ground nitrogen did remain on both the high and the low fertilized sites and can affect productivity on these types of soils in the Pacific Northwest for up to 30 years after application. I'll take any questions now or wait till after.
We don't have time for questions.
Thank you very much.
Please save your questions for discussion.